Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Margaret Rozga has been a force for social justice in Milwaukee for more than half a century. She marched in the streets in 1967 for fair housing, and she's never stopped fighting for civil rights in our city. But Rozga is also an accomplished poet, a creative pursuit that's both fed by her activism and separate from it.
Rozga is a professor emerita of English at UW-Waukesha, and her books include Pestiferous Questions, A Life in Poems, a biography of activist and writer Jesse Benton Fremont. She wrote in narrative poems. She also edited the anthology Where I Want to Live, Poems for Fair and Affordable Housing, and contributed a poem as well, which we'll hear later in our interview.
Last Monday, Rozga was appointed Wisconsin's newest poet laureate, and we asked her into the studio to talk about this latest chapter in her life. Margaret Rozga, Peggy, it is such an honor to have you back in the studio. Congratulations on your new appointment.
Thank you so much. It's been a real thrill. I can't wait to start poeting around the state.
Poeting. I love that as a verb. That's wonderful. this appointment, it's a terrific thing. I just love the fact that Wisconsin has a poet laureate. That is just such a grand thing to begin with. Has poetry been with you as long as your social activism, or is it something that was earlier or later?
It was probably both earlier and later. It was one of the things that I loved in school. The first poem that I ever really loved was Gerard Manley Hopkins' Spring and Fall, and for totally non-poetic reason, it begins Margaret. Oh, he has an accent on the last syllable. Margaret, are you grieving over Golden Grove on leaving? You, like the things of man, with your fresh thoughts care for, can you? And I thought, oh, he's talking to me. So I began with this idea of poetry as intense and deep conversation. Probably lost track of it for a while, but never entirely. And certainly in the last 20 or 30 years, it's been an area of concentration.
Do you remember the first poem that you had to memorize in school?
I do. I had this wonderful English teacher my junior year in high school, and she had the class memorize poems and recite them together. And that's how we would begin class. One student would say the name, another student would say the author, and then we'd all say it together. So, Emily Dickinson, I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'd banish us, you know. How dreary to be somebody, how public like a frog, to sing your name the livelong day to an admiring bog.
Mine was The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. I think it was in the fourth grade, and I had to learn the whole thing. However many gazillion stanzas
it was.
Yeah, but I can still remember, you know, the 18th of April in 75, Hardly a Man Is Now Alive, who remembers that famous day and year. Yeah, there was something about learning the cadence and learning language in that way that was so different from just reading a book.
Right.
And obviously it spoke to you from a very early age.
Because I've retained it all these years. Actually, previous poet laureate Kimberly Blaser, that was her project, the term that she was the poet laureate. She had people who had memorized a poem, I say committed to heart, recited, and she recorded it. Now, on the Poet Laureate website, there is a map of Wisconsin and dots where somebody recited a poem for her, and you can click on it and hear it. And people ask me, well, if I want to get a start with poetry, if I haven't really read anything since Shel Silverstein, where do I go? And I think that's a great place to go because you hear it. You hear the words, you hear the wonderful sound effects as somebody who cared enough about this poem to learn it says it. So I highly recommend that.
There's something so human about it, about telling each other a story that way, I think. And I think it's why children react to it so strongly.
Yes. Almost everybody that I've talked to has recalled a poem from their childhood. Well, and also the rhythm and the repetition and the fact that it connects to something that is going on in your life. My daughter remembers a poem called Homework. Homework, oh, homework, I hate you, you stink.
I think we can all relate to that, no matter how old we get.
Yes.
Yeah. How does your poetry come to you? Does it just sort of appear in your brain or in your heart? How does it happen for you?
It used to be that I would have some sense of one thing being like another. I never made a poem out of this particular thing, but it's the only example I can think of right now. I was driving in my car one day, and I saw from the side angle of somebody's house what looked to be a large playpen in the back of their house. Well, it was their patio. So here's this patio playpen. I never turned it into a poem, but that kind of perception that one thing looks like another used to be the way poems started for me, because I think that metaphor is really important to poems. Lately, it has been more a case of, I can't write a poem, I can't write a poem, I can't write a poem, I've forgotten how to write poems, what am I going to do? This is the way I identify, I can't write a poem, and there it is. Actually, this was in a history book that I read, not a textbook, but a book of history. It was the author talking about having written the book, and he says, if you write, the words will come.
So it's the act of actually putting pen to paper.
Yes. Yes.
And do you still write by hand or do you do it on the computer?
I mostly get started by hand. I keep a journal. I call it an observation journal. I try to write every morning 13 observations, and they don't have to relate to one another. And I'm not trying to write a poem. I'm just trying to practice seeing, which I think is important to a poem, to everybody, but to a poet. And sometimes that will turn into a poem. It is the act of writing, right, that gets it going. So I usually start on paper, not always from that morning journal entry. Sometimes I wake up in the morning with a phrase in my head, and I think I've got to do something with this.
To put a collection together for you, and I imagine this has a lot to do with the collection of poems that are going to go into it, but about how long does it take you to get a collection that you're happy with?
A long time. My last book, Pestiferous Questions, A Life in Poems, came out in 2017, and I probably started writing poems that would eventually make their way into the book in 2012 or 13. And then it took a while to realize, oh, I can keep going with this. And then it took several read-throughs and lining things up to work with each other.
So it's not a fast process.
It is not. Not for me. There may be some people for whom at least a given project goes quickly, but no. Hasn't happened for me.
Well, earlier you were talking about cadence and rhythm, which are, of course, are so important to music and poetry, which to me, they're sort of hand in hand. They're sitting right next to each other. I think of cadence and rhythm, and I think of marching, and I think of activism, and I think of going into the streets, and the idea that those two things are somehow connected for you as well. That there's the cadence of the marching, there's the rhythm of the kind of speech where you're asking and demanding change, and also the poetry as well. Or do you find them to be two different parts of you?
Oh, I think that's wonderful. I think you're on the verge of a poem.
You have to write it for me.
I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, the rhythm is one of the things that I think about when I'm revising. Sometimes in the first draft, the wording is clunky and not rhythmical, and getting that that flow, that momentum going, is one of the things I think about. But I never quite made the connection with being on the march. I love it.
Well, it's a kind of, I mean, poetry is a communication, but so is the activism.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, my first book is about the marches. It actually started when the theater director at the time at UW in Waukesha, where I was teaching, he told me that I would write the play that he was going to produce that year. He wanted it to be on the theme of race and racism because that's what the Campus Read book was. And so I tried to do this. What helped me was that I was at a gathering with other people who had been involved in the Youth Council, and they knew that I was supposed to write this play. So they started telling me their stories. And I woke up the next morning, and I could hear their voices. So before I got dressed, before I had breakfast, I went to my computer, and I started to type everything that I could remember them saying. And then they became characters in the play, and a lot of what they said made its way into the play. And then after that was over, the play had a couple productions outside of that initial one. But producing a play is expensive. You need a director, you need actors, you need a venue, you need tickets. And I thought, you know, these are almost poems the way they are, because a lot of it was monologue. If I would put it into poems, I could do it myself. I could just read the poems, or I could invite audience members to read parts with me. And so that's what I did. So, and that was the first I really tried to do a book of poems. And then I was amazed that it took me 40 years to write about something that was so important to my life.
In a way, I'm not surprised, because it was that important. It takes a while, I think, to process something that enormous, something that huge.
Yes.
I would be surprised if you could have done it a year or two after.
Yes. You do need that kind of mellowing time, that kind of reflection time, although I hadn't been thinking too much of, well, I guess I was. It was always part of me. I did think about it.
It's there.
Yeah.
You might not be conscious of it, but sure. Yeah, it's there. It's ruminating.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite words when it comes to art making of any kind. Well, that's an obvious way that your activism and your poetry overlapped and informed each other. Do they do it in other ways? Do those two parts of you meld in other ways in your work? Or do you kind of have different things that you talk about in both places?
I think having written 200 Nights and One Day is that now I am alert to the possibility that what is happening in front of me is a poem, and it is, in a sense, being written for me. I just have to do the pen on paper or the keyboard or whatever and get what I am seeing and hearing and feeling.
It sounds like they're even closer now,
those two
parts of you.
Oh, yeah, they definitely are, right, yeah. One of the poems that I wrote most recently was a poem about the people who participated in the sing-alongs, the solidarity sing-alongs in the Capitol building. And I didn't know I was going to do this. I kept thinking, people say breaking news, and you see it scroll along the bottom of your TV or interrupt a broadcast with the breaking news. And that struck me as being such an odd phrase, breaking. And then if you switch the words around, news breaking, breaking news, news is broken. So I was just playing around with that. And then I thought, we were getting a lot of news of things breaking, broken, and they kept singing. And so that was the continuity. So that became a poem.
I love the idea of singing as a way of healing broken things.
Yes. Yes. Well, singing was always so important to the civil rights movement. And you can tell the history of the civil rights movement in the songs that came from this place and that place. And Milwaukee added some to the repertoire.
Have you ever written song lyrics?
I was at a workshop once where one of the presenters was a songwriter, and she talked us through writing songs. She played a melody for us on her guitar, and she kept humming it over and over and over and over while we were writing. And, I mean, that was a case where that melody, that rhythm, led to, well, you had to say the next word because it fit.
But a different process.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. People talk about sometimes song lyrics are poetry or at least poetic, but they are not the same thing as a poem.
Yes, well, that debate certainly came up when Bob Dylan got the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Yes, it did. And there are a lot of people who think his work is absolutely poetry, mm-hmm. and other people who don't. And, you know, and there are other songwriters that I would say, well, no, I would never nominate that person. Great songs.
Yes.
But not poetry.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but I think he definitely blends in there. He crosses both lines.
He makes the question a difficult one.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
Yes, he does. Well, now that you are going to be our poet laurate for a couple of years, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Two-year term.
And Kim Blazer, who came in here a couple of years ago when she was appointed, you mentioned her earlier about what she had done, one of her projects during her time. What do you hope to accomplish in the 2 years that you were going to be wearing this hat?
Well, I would like to see poetry become a matter of ordinary conversation. When you are with other people, maybe people you don't know, and you're looking for some common ground, one of the things to have you read any good books lately? Have you seen a good movie lately? What poem do you remember and like? In fact, I've started to ask people that, which may lead to my next comment. Do you have a favorite poem, at least for today?
Do I? Oh, my goodness. There are so many wonderful poems. I have to say, I can't pick just one, but it is one poet, and that's Mary Oliver. Two of her probably most famous poems, but they're famous, I think, for a reason. They're so wonderful. One's called The Journey, and one is called Wild Geese. And they're both about going into the world and being yourself, finding yourself and not being afraid to do that, to live your life as fully as you possibly can, to not accept someone else's or society's restrictions on who you are or should be?
Yes. I often had students who would discover Mary Oliver and just really get deeply into her work. I used to use as a writing prompt, a line from Mary Oliver, "There's only one question, how to love this world." She has a really cool way of working the more abstract concept or line into the middle of her poem, and then it's surrounded by all this wonderful detail.
You have to go into the center.
Yes.
Which, of course, is a wonderful metaphor.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But there are so many other poets that I love. Elizabeth Bishop was a poet that I absolutely loved. Rilke. In translation, I can't read German well enough to read him in German, but a good translation. There's something about Rilke that is just lovely. And his letters to a young poet, those wonderful letters that came out in anthology about 40 years ago, were a part of and still are a part of my bookcase. You know, I haven't read them in a long time, but so important, so important. Which leads me to my last question, which is, why is poetry so important?
It enriches our lives. It's our heritage. It's some of the best things that people have thought over the course of the ages and are thinking right now and will think tomorrow night and next week. And we want to claim that heritage. We want it to be part of who we are, be part of the way that we look at the world helped to shape our thinking.
Will you share a poem with us?
Yes, I would love to do that. One of the things that we did during the 50th anniversary of the open housing marches last year was to create a chapbook of poems titled Where I Want to Live, Poems for Fair and Affordable Housing. And this is my poem from that collection. It's called Cake and Lemonade for Neighbors. And before I get into the poem, I just must say that in the chapbook itself, my friend from the days of the open housing marches, Mary Arms, provided the cake recipe that's on the facing page. And the language is so wonderful in the recipe. It flies off in little tendrils. Anyway, let me read my poem. Cake and Lemonade for Neighbors. Where I want to live, neighbors gather on front porches, watch their children play across multiple front yards, laugh in Spanish, Arabic, Burmese, English, talk about back in the day, share sweet and savory snacks, lend each other a cup of sugar or flour, borrow hedge trimmers, a shovel, or rake, help with chores when need be, apologize when need be, offer a word of advice, not more. Drum, strum guitars and pluck banjos, make a little noise sometimes. Sometimes bring out a kitchen chair so everyone finds a comfortable place to sit, unscreened, wide or narrow porch or on the stoop. Sometimes just enjoy all black, brown, white, golden quiet together.
Peggy Rozga, it has been an honor to have you in the studio. Congratulations on being our next Poet Laureate.
Thank you.
Margaret Rozga read her poem Cake and Lemonade for Neighbors. Rozga was recently appointed to be Wisconsin's next Poet Laureate, a post she'll hold for 2 years.